are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me, as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Happy Tuesday to all of our listeners. Just like the players and coaches on the Seahawks, we unfortunately have to move on from Sunday's win. We would love to bask in that victory a little bit longer, but the Titans are going to be coming to town on Sunday. It's time to start ramping up for week two. So it's Throwback Tuesday. We're going to be looking back at the last two times the Seahawks and Titans faced off in 2013 and 2017. And we'll be pulling back the curtain, taking a look at the Titans heading into this week two matchup. Very successful 2020 season, not so successful in their opener against the Arizona Cardinals. Looking for a Sunday pregame show that talks about every game and every team in depth? Check out the Locked On NFL Sunday Show every Sunday live at 11 a.m. Eastern. No sketches, no celebrity camos, no fluff, just football every Sunday morning with host Cody Rourke and Ross Jackson. Follow and subscribe Locked On NFL on Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube. And don't forget to turn on the notifications to be notified when the show goes live every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. We've got 1 week in the books, and we already have some significant changes in our Locked On Podcast Network Tegna NFL Power Rankings. Last week, the Seahawks were listed at number 7 going into the start of the season. They have vaulted up to number 4, moving up 3 spots. One of the bigger movers moving up on the board after one game. Obviously, a very small sample size, but taking a look at our power rankings, you'll notice, Rob, that there's a lot of NFC West flair on this list, especially in the top 6. You've got the Rams at number 3 coming off their impressive Week 1 win against the Bears. You've got the Seahawks coming in at number 4, the 49ers at number 6, and oh, by the way, the Cardinals, after just smashing the Titans in Week 1, they come in at number 10, obviously the only division in the NFL that's got 4 teams in the top 10, and you can look at power rankings, and obviously they're subjective based on the voters, but this seems about right, having all 4 of those teams in the top 10 after last week.
I certainly think so. I think that it makes sense to have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, obviously the defending champions, had a spectacular comeback win in their Week 1 performance. I think it makes sense to have them number 1 overall. I think that the team that they beat in the Super Bowl had another comeback of their own in the Kansas City Chiefs at number 2. I would beg to differ as far as the Los Angeles Rams at number 3 overall. But as you said, Corbin, the 4 teams in the NFC West all being a part of the top 10, I think, says it all. I think that you could make an argument that the Arizona Cardinals, listed 4th among those NFC West teams, has a legitimate gripe. But again, the most important thing is the fact that all 4 NFC West teams are among the top 10 on our board here. And I think that you watch the game tape and it bears that out. These are 4 very, very good teams that all could make a significant run into the playoffs. It's going to be fascinating to kind of see if the Seahawks are going to be able to have their, you know, to basically to defend their divisional title. I think that it's appropriate that the Rams are ahead of the Seahawks, considering obviously the Rams set the Seahawks packing in the playoffs a year ago. And you can make an argument that the Rams are improved at Matthew Stafford, but lo and behold, the Seahawks squad, that there was so much consternation. Can they block anybody? Can they cover anybody? And here they are, ranked number 4 overall. I think with a quarterback who is coming off a performance, I think is as good as you will ever see, at the position. And I would argue that he remains the best quarterback in the division. So for my money, I would rank the Seahawks as the best team in the NFC West and the only team behind the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as far as the NFC. One other thing I would mention, however, is that you see how far down the Tennessee Titans are, number 16th overall. Obviously, in a 32-team league, that means that they are right smack dab in the middle. And I just think this is a much better team than right smack dab in the middle. I think the fact that they've gone to the playoffs each of the past 2 seasons suggests that they are a better team, and you know that they are going to be hungry to be able to try to balance up their record after suffering that loss against the Cardinals in Week 1. Be careful, Seahawks fans, what you wish for. This is the Tennessee Titans team that is coming into Seattle ready to rock, and I think that they are better than 16th overall. So I think this is going to be a fascinating match. Can't wait to break it down.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at them the next several days here on the podcast as we get closer to our Week 2 matchup, the home opener for the Seahawks at Lumen Field. And I would agree with you. I think the Titans are certainly better than several of the teams that are in front of them, but they did not play like it last week. The Cardinals just ripped them to shreds from the opening kickoff. So again, that just shows you the strength of the NFC West. Now we'll see if the Seahawks can take the Titans' best punch, because I guarantee you we're going to be getting it. Mike Vrabel's team is going to show up ready to go. So we'll be breaking down that matchup as we go. But the Titans were the second farthest team to plunge on this list. Only the Packers went further down after getting destroyed by the Saints. And I think it's interesting when you look at these power rankings. Again, it's only been 1 week, but you look at the teams that are listed in the top 16, and only a handful of those teams that, aside from the NFC West team Seattle will be playing against twice, only a handful of those teams are on the Seahawks schedule. They'll be playing the Steelers in primetime in Pittsburgh. They'll be playing against the Saints, and they'll be playing the Packers as well as the Titans. But the rest of the teams on this list, they will not be playing aside from their NFC West foes. And there are a number of teams that are on their schedule that are near the bottom of this list, the Vikings falling significantly after losing in overtime to the Bengals. Again, it's one game. Some of these teams that are in that back half, they will get back into the top 15. They'll be in the playoff hunt. It's only been one game. But you can look at vice versa, too. There will be some teams that are in the top 10, top 15 that will struggle at some point this year and maybe fall down this list. But nonetheless, it looks like the schedule, it's obviously going to be really difficult with those NFC West games that the Seahawks have every year. They got to play those teams six times. But there are some matchups that maybe look a little bit more favorable, especially when you get later down the season, especially when Washington loses their starting quarterback and Ryan Fitzpatrick might be out for the long haul. They're hoping 8 weeks, and by that point, the Seahawks would have to face him when he returns. But that's a hip injury. You don't know when he's going to be back. So there are some question marks already after 1 week. It's always a joy to look at these power rankings. But nonetheless, we just want to remind our fans, it's only been one game. And like we said at the beginning of the show, you got to move on. You got to get ready for that next opponent. You know Tennessee, they're going to be looking out for some revenge here against another NFC West opponent. So that's what's going to make the rest of this episode a ton of fun. We are going to start diving into that upcoming matchup with the Titans. First, though, we're going to take a blast to the past to open up the second quarter with our annual Throwback Tuesday segment, taking a look at the last two matchups between the Seahawks and the Titans. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We're back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back on to start another football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 100% welcome bonus. That's double your initial deposit just for signing up. Don't forget to use the promo code NFL100 from football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet online, the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Tuesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. The Seahawks will be returning home for their first game at Lumen Field in the regular season, taking on the Titans this Sunday. The Titans coming off a really difficult game against the Arizona Cardinals, who ran up and down the field, both with the run game and the passing game against them, built a 24-6 lead at halftime. Titans were not able to recover from that, had a lot of issues protecting Ryan Tannehill. We've talked a lot about Chandler Jones the last couple of days off air. Chandler Jones is on pace for like a billion sacks this season. He had 5 sacks in this game against the Titans. They could not figure out how to keep him out of the backfield. Let's go back a blast from the past, as we always do on Throwback Tuesday. We're going to look back to the last two times these teams played. Same division as the Colts, so obviously they only play every 4 years. The last time the Seahawks and Titans met up was 2017, and then they played in 2013. They also had a matchup in 2010. This has been one of the few teams that Pete Carroll actually has had some struggles with since he became coach back in 2010. He's 1-2 against the Titans. They lost in 2010 as well as 2017. The Seahawks do hold the advantage in the all-time series, though, including games against the Tennessee Oilers, the Houston Oilers. Those games added in, the Seahawks are 10-7 overall. Let's look back at those last two matchups. Swing back to 2013, the year the Seahawks obviously won the Super Bowl. They went 13-3. One of those 13 wins was against a Titans squad that came to CenturyLink Field with a 2-3 record. It was a team that had a lot of turnover on its roster in previous seasons. Ryan Fitzpatrick was the quarterback, bringing up Fitzmagic again. This was about 10 teams ago for him. He was the starting quarterback for the Titans that year. Chris Johnson was getting towards the end of his run as the workhorse running back. They didn't have many weapons on the outside. They were rebuilding their offensive line. This was a team that really struggled all of that season, but they were very game coming into CenturyLink Field, and they put up a fight. In fact, they were ahead of the Seahawks at halftime in this game based on the fact that they got a 77-yard fumble return from Jason McCourty. And that was one of the weirdest plays that I've seen the Seahawks have. And that's saying something. Chris Maragos getting the snap, botched it, tried to recover it. Ball gets knocked out. McCourty returns it 77 yards for a score. And that really silenced the crowd, at least briefly. But the Seahawks were able to get things turned around in the second half. And this is one of those games where you look at the box score, it really wasn't, you know, the game didn't have anything spectacular that went on. It was one of those games that just kind of happened, and the Seahawks managed to just get through with the W, and they held on for a 20-13 victory. So not one of their more commanding victories that season against a team that they were far superior to, but that tends to happen sometimes. You play down to your competition. The Titans were a game squad, and they gave them a fight.
They certainly did. And ultimately, the Seahawks won. And as you said, Corbin, I mean, obviously that was the season that the Seahawks went on to beat the Denver Broncos and win their first Super Bowl championship. And so I think that you could have probably predicted, just listening to the show, once we mentioned the year, that the Seahawks were going to emerge victorious in that game. Obviously, Russell Wilson was one of the starters for the Seahawks at that point. Marshawn Lynch was one of the stars. I think there's a lot of Seahawks fans out there who basically remember that roster. And so I love that you mentioned that it was Ryan Fitzpatrick who was the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans at that point. It was Chris Johnson, CJ2K, what was the running back for the Titans. So this is very much a completely different team than the Seahawks are going to be facing this week. We had different coaches. Mike Mularkey was the head coach at that time. Mike Munchak was the head coach of the Tennessee Titans in the 2017 season. So again, you had some very different Tennessee Titans than the Seahawks are going to be facing this year. I don't have the sharp memory that you do, Corbin. I'm not going to be able to remember the Chris Maragos fumble and things like that. Jason McCourty returning that 77-yard touchdown back. But what I do remember is just the different level of physicality that the Seattle Seahawks had in that 2013-2014 season. They basically were able to just flex on every single opponent. And I mention that because if the Tennessee Titans can come into Seattle and beat the Seahawks, as good as they are feeling right now, it's going to have to basically duplicate the effort that the Seahawks had against Tennessee years ago. They are going to have to be the physical team. And that's the thing, is Mike Vrabel's squad, with guys like Derrick Henry and the free agent addition that they made, Bud Dupree, Julio Jones, they've got the players to do so. And so that's the thing about this squad, is I love looking back, especially some of the other players the Tennessee Titans have brought. I think there's a lot of Seahawks fans out there who might remember that prior to the 2012 draft, when the Seahawks wound up selecting Russell Wilson 75th overall in the third round, there was a lot of talk that John Schneider might use the number 12 overall selection on Ryan Tannehill, the current quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. Now, he, of course, was not with Tennessee back then. He was with the Miami Dolphins. But still, there are a lot of changes the Tennessee Titans have made over the last couple of years that kind of allow us to look back on them and recognize that this is a squad that is, again, very different and now very angry as well.
And they're a lot different than the 2017 squad. A number of the players that were on that Titans team that beat the Seahawks in Nashville A lot of those players are no longer on the roster, including the starting quarterback at that time, Marcus Mariota. He is now the backup to Derek Carr with the Las Vegas Raiders. But on that particular game, that was one of those really odd ones. The Seahawks did not have any turnovers in that game. They had almost 400 passing yards. Both teams were very similar on third down conversion rates, and yet the Titans were able to build a 30-14 lead by the end of the third quarter. I mean, this game was really tight at halftime. The Seahawks were right in the thick of things. And then they came out. They were down 10-7. They get a quick touchdown pass from Russell Wilson to Chris Carson. They're ahead 14-10. It looks like the Seahawks are in good shape. And then a six-minute span, the Titans scored 21 points. They had a long touchdown, a 55-yarder to Rishard Matthews. Then they came back, a touchdown to Jonnu Smith, who's no longer on the team, left this offseason for the Patriots, but was, I believe, in his rookie season then, had a 24-yard touchdown reception. And then a few minutes later, the Seahawks have another quick drive that ends with a punt. And on the very next play, DeMarco Murray goes 75 yards for a touchdown. So this game just snowballed out of control, and it wasn't due to turnovers. It was due to a couple of bad offensive possessions and the defense just falling apart and crumbling in that third quarter, giving up a bunch of explosive plays. And Pete Carroll, I don't even know if he was chewing his gum on the sideline at that point. You could just tell that he was extremely frustrated. He does not expect his defense to ever play like that. They tried to make things interesting in the fourth quarter. They got a couple of touchdown passes from Russell Wilson to Luke Wilson and Paul Richardson, but it was too little too late. There was a field goal by the Titans in that quarter that extended the lead. They ended up winning by six. The final score was 33-27. That was one of those games in 2017. Like, we saw a number of them where the Seahawks had chances to win and they just couldn't find ways to finish. Ended up going 9-7, the only year under Pete Carroll with Russell Wilson as the quarterback, they haven't won double-digit games, and they missed the playoffs. That was a game that really came back to bite them by the end of the year.
It really was, and I definitely remember the DeMarco Murray run because that was the one that was kind of – I hate to use this expression, but the straw that broke the camel's back. And so when that big run happened and the Tennessee Titans were able to jump to a 30-14 halftime lead, then, yeah, that really changed everything. 30-14 lead in the third quarter, that really changed everything. And you mentioned the fact that this was kind of a Seahawks kind of a game, the fact that Russell Wilson was as effective as he was. There were no turnovers from the Seahawks. They were playing on the road. They scored four times and all four of them were touchdowns. The Tennessee Titans, playing at home, of course, had four field goals. If not for the utter collapse that was the third quarter, the Seahawks should have absolutely won that football game. So to me, I actually kind of remember that game a little bit fondly. Like, this is the type of game that you should win every single time. So why didn't you? Looking at the statistics, one of the things that really jumps out to me, besides, again, the mistakes that were made, the DeMarco Murray big long touchdown run being a critical one, but I also looked at the penalties. The Seahawks had 11 penalties for 98 yards in that game. The Tennessee Titans only had 5 for 45. So if you basically double a team's penalties, we know the way that the Seahawks have had some just kind of, you know, some penalties at just the absolute worst times. That can cost you a game, especially on the road. And so to me, that is one of the things to remember about that game. See if you can make the Tennessee Titans be the team that has to try to come back. That's where Ryan Tannehill is, where he struggles a little bit, as we just saw this last week against the Arizona Cardinals. And that's, unfortunately for Seahawks fans, where Seattle struggled in trying to make their valiant but ultimately unsuccessful comeback attempt back in 2017 against those same Tennessee Titans.
Well, Seahawks will try to get back in the win column against the Titans after losing that last one and losing two of the past three between these two teams. When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to look at the current Titans coming off a difficult loss to the Cardinals. We'll look at what's new as far as additions and departures on the roster and the coaching staff, their 2021 draft class, and some inside the numbers from last season and last week's game. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. This episode is brought your way by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and Rock Auto has prices that are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, or even new carpet. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in there. How did you hear about us box? So they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows. You're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never seen before, so you can watch your favorite shows, movies, and sports all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, no more need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. Thanks for tuning in to our Tuesday episode. We've got to move on to week two. We'd love to continue chatting about that awesome win the Seahawks had on the road in Indianapolis, but that is not the way the NFL works. You got to flip the script, move the page. It's time to start preparing for the Tennessee Titans, who will be coming to Seattle after a 38-13 loss to the Arizona Cardinals. They're licking their wounds, looking for some revenge. And as we talked about last quarter, this is still a very talented football team led by Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill on offense. They got plenty of playmakers on defense. They're well coached with Mike Vrabel at the helm. And when they've been beaten in the past, especially games that they've lost 10 or more points, they have found ways to bounce back victorious. The Seahawks have to be ready for that. This is going to be a team that's going to come to town much better than the one that got beat down by the Arizona Cardinals last week. Let's look at what's changed for the Titans. Obviously, they made some big additions this offseason, and none bigger than Julio Jones coming over via trade from the Atlanta Falcons, giving them another playmaking receiver to go with A.J. Brown. So they've got two big-bodied athletic receivers that are going to be a matchup problem for D.J. Reed and Trey Flowers. And when we get to matchups later this week, we will certainly be talking about that a lot more in depth. But the addition of Julio Jones really makes this a four-headed monster for the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, my goodness. The addition of Julio Jones really changes everything in a lot of ways, Corbin. I mean, that is obviously a phenomenal player, a future Hall of Famer. Anytime you can add a player of that pedigree, then, yeah, I think that it can absolutely change your roster. And I think that, you know, he has received plenty of attention. Of course, skill position players typically do. I would argue that there are some significant additions on the defensive side of the ball as well that have not necessarily generated quite as much interest, but I still believe helps make the Tennessee Titans into, in my opinion, one of the most well-rounded teams in all of the NFL. I have a great deal of respect for the rankings, our kind of big board power rankings that had the Tennessee Titans at 16th. I think this is a top 10 club. I think this is absolutely a Super Bowl contending team. Frankly, I think that this is a team that matches up better against the Seahawks, even in Seattle, than the Indianapolis Colts did back at Lucas Oil Stadium. So I think this is very much a team that the Seahawks need to be paying attention to. And those defensive players I kind of referenced before a moment ago, Bud Dupree from the Pittsburgh Steelers, DeNico Autry from the Indianapolis Colts, and combine the production that they had a year ago. You're talking about 20-plus sacks that you're adding to a defensive line that already has a player that I'm certainly very, very high on in Jeffrey Simmons, the young defensive tackle. So I think there's a lot of Seahawks fans who are feeling really, really good about how well the Seattle's offensive line performed against the Titans, performed against the Colts in week one. But again, this is a very talented team that's coming in. And then you said the biggest thing is Derrick Henry. I really think, and I'm sure that we'll be breaking down matchups as we go. But again, the priority number one, number two, number five, number 20 is stopping Derrick Henry, because he is that good. And there's no question about it. If Derrick Henry gets rolling, just think about the play action possibilities you have with a mobile, very talented quarterback and Ryan Tannehill going to those receivers. Again, Julio Jones and A.J. Brown as well. You don't think A.J. Brown wants to come in here and show his former teammate, D.K. Metcalf, you know, how to play? I just think this is a fascinating matchup. Can't wait to keep breaking it on down.
And the thing about the Titans roster, we just mentioned those additions, but there were certainly some big losses for this team coming off of their second playoff appearance in a row. None bigger than Jonnu Smith, who actually mentioned last quarter, because back in the 2017 game, he had a receiving touchdown. He had a pretty big game against the Seahawks in his rookie year as part of that victory at Nashville. And Jonnu Smith is now in New England, and the Titans are struggling to figure out what they're going to do at the tight end position. They've had some major changes at that spot, obviously Smith being the biggest departure, but they've lost some key players at that position. A few years ago, Delanie Walker was still there playing well. Now he's retired out of the league. So the Titans have been trying to figure that position out, and right now that is one of the weaker points of their offense. And I think that a loss that isn't being talked about enough, a player that wasn't really a starter full-time, but he could fill in a number of positions, Dennis Kelly not being on the team anymore. This is an O-line that really struggled last week, and he's a player that might have been able to make this starting lineup. And for him to be out of town now, I think is a more significant loss than people realize. But those aren't the only ones that are gone. They also lost receiver Corey Davis. They replaced him with Julio Jones. So you're bringing in future Hall of Famer, player that they still believe is going to be able to put up big numbers to replace Davis, who is now with the New York Jets. They lost Jadeveon Clowney, who Seahawks fans know really well. Didn't really do much in a handful of games before going on injured reserve. Another lost season for the former number one overall pick. But they replaced him ultimately with Bud Dupree and Danico Autry coming in as their new pass rushers with around 20 sacks combined between the two of them last year. And Adoree Jackson, their former first-round pick out of USC, was also released, ended up landing with the New York Giants. And so they've had some significant turnover on that roster, but I know that you are a fan of a number of the picks that they made in the draft to help replace some of those players.
I am. Absolutely no doubt about it. As you just mentioned, the fact that they needed to address their pass rush, they needed to address the cornerback position as well after basically cutting ties with Adoree Jackson. And I think the Titans got two of the better young cornerbacks, certainly in this past draft class. Now, Caleb Farley in the first round just is a phenomenal talent. But, you know, of course, there's so many times that the listeners to our podcast, Corbin, and then just anybody else who's followed me as far as the NFL draft coverage and knows the local product, Elijah Molden, the number 100 overall selection in this year's pass draft. I mentioned 100 overall because he's so going to outplay number 100 overall. Any UW fans out there who remember all of the big plays that Elijah Molden made for the University of Washington, he's making them for the Tennessee Titans as well. I watched a lot of Tennessee tape over the preseason. Elijah Molden is having every bit the standout rookie season, at least so far, that the Husky fans might expect. So I think that those two players, as far as Tennessee's draft class, certainly deserve to be mentioned. But there was one other person that I wanted to mention that the Tennessee Titans lost that I think is significant, and that would be their offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith, who is now with the Atlanta Falcons. And you take away a team's offensive coordinator, and that can completely change their identity. The Seahawks were beneficiaries of that. We saw how much of a explosive performance Seattle had with their new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. We saw, unfortunately for Brian Schottenheimer, that the Jacksonville Jaguars, with Schottenheimer moving on to Jacksonville, as well as Darrell Bevell, they did not have that first big success. The Tennessee Titans, with their new offensive coordinator, did not have that success. The Atlanta Falcons, with Arthur Smith as their head coach, did not have that success. Grass isn't always greener on the other side. So I think, to me, that is one significant departure that we have to mention. Can the Tennessee Titans get their offense back on track? Obviously, the Seahawks are okay if that happens, as long as it happens in week three rather than week two.
Let's look inside the numbers here real quick. Some numbers on offense and defense. Since we've only had one game to work off of, we're going to sprinkle in a few stats from last week that are notable, but there are also going to be some 2020 stats because, again, just four quarters of play, and this is a very good football team that numbers from last week are not going to reflect that. And so looking on the offensive side of the football, a few things that jumped out to me from last week. First and foremost, 81, that is the percentage of snaps last week that the Titans were in 11 personnel with three receivers and a tight end. That was the second most in the NFL. You go back to last year, they ran a lot of 11 personnel too. So they're going to be busting those three wide receivers out early and often. You can expect that obviously with Julio Jones as well as A.J. Brown. They've got some other receiving talent on this roster as well. So that's a position that they're pretty well set. The Seahawks have to be prepared to face that kind of a look, and they're obviously going to be feeding Derrick Henry a lot out of those 11 personnel looks, hoping they can spread the defense out a little bit and get the king rolling on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm happy that you kind of mentioned him as the king, because that's certainly the impression that I got in my conversations with some of the Seattle scouts when they were evaluating Derrick Henry. There was a great deal of buzz from John Schneider, from some of Seattle's other scouts that have since moved on elsewhere, that Derrick Henry is exactly the type of player that they were looking for. And you just consider what the Seahawks have been able to do, of course, with Chris Carson previously, obviously with Marshawn Lynch. I mean, they love the guys that can pound the rock. And while I was being a little bit critical of what we've seen from the Titans, at least in this very first opening week, where Derrick Henry, as much as I want to praise him as royalty, he didn't look like royalty against the Arizona Cardinals. They were able to shut him down. But one thing I thought was significant is Derrick Henry had three catches out of the backfield last week. The backup running back, Darrington Evans, had three catches as well. So that's going to be absolutely critical for the Seahawks to continue to play the quality defense that we saw against the Indianapolis Colts. Because if the Titans are unable to throw the ball deep, they will pepper the ball to their backs, and Seattle's linebackers are going to have to be able to tackle them. And that's easier said than done when you're talking about a back the size of Derrick Henry.
Looking at our next couple numbers here from last week, I mentioned it earlier, Chandler Jones had five of these, but the Titans allowed six sacks on the afternoon for 56 yards, both of those being the most in the NFL. Now, let's look at what the Titans were last year, because I don't think the numbers I just read really reflect this football team. It was one game. They really struggled. And there are a number of stats here that tell you just how good this offense was a year ago. 45% third down conversion rate. That was seventh best in the NFL. So they know how to move the chains. 74% red zone touchdown percentage. That was second best in the NFL, even ahead of Seattle at number three. So they know how to finish, and obviously having Derrick Henry makes that much easier when turn hand the ball off to the big fella and let him get into the end zone. And then Ryan Tannehill at a 106.5 passer rating, which was the fifth best in the NFL. His career resurgence in Tennessee continued a year ago. And maybe the stat that is most alarming, and as a running back guy, I just am blown away by this. Derrick Henry, according to Pro Football Focus, had 1,525 yards after contact. He would have won the rushing title with after contact yards a year ago. That is just insane. And that tells you the type of greatness that we're talking about there with King Henry.
It really does. I mean, that is an absolutely mind-boggling statistic. But at the same time, from a Seahawks perspective, what that says to me is that the Tennessee Titans offensive line is not all that great. And that if Seattle, and that to me is going to be one of the fascinating things about this, Corbin, is obviously this is going to be the very first game back in Lumen Field. How are the 12s? Are they as jacked up and ready to go as we are seeing teams and their fan bases all across the NFL and college football landscape? If the Seahawks can have that type of intensity, I think it's that much more likely that Derrick Henry is going to be hit behind the line of scrimmage. And considering how well the Seattle tackled against a very physical, talented back a week ago in Jonathan Taylor, then I feel confident that Seattle will be able to slow Derrick Henry down. But if the Titans are able to get ahead, if the crowd is not as jacked as I anticipate that they might, then there is a good possibility that Derrick Henry is going to be able to break some of those runs. We referenced before the DeMarco Murray 75-yard touchdown a couple of years ago from the Tennessee Titans. We saw some of the big plays that the Arizona Cardinals had, the Seahawks had, that the Rams had, in the NFC West Division, the 49ers as well. I guess I got to acknowledge them also. The huge plays, those are the types of plays that can completely change games, especially when you have teams that like to run the ball and play it safe a little bit, the way that Pete Carroll at least historically has, and certainly Mike Vrabel, another defensive-minded head coach, has as well. It's those type of big plays that can completely change this football game, especially for teams on the road. And when you have the skill position talent that the Tennessee Titans do, they might be able to do exactly that.
On the defensive side of the football, you mentioned the possible concerns the Titans might have with their offensive line. Even with the additions that they have had to their pass rush, there's a few stats that really jump out to me looking at last week and last season in general. Last week, it was really the secondary that was concerning. They finished with 9 yards per pass attempt allowed, which was the seventh highest in the NFL. They also gave up 6 passes of 20-plus yards, which was the second most in the league. And I know it's just one game, but that tells me that this is secondary that is primed to be cooked by Russell Wilson and Seattle's receivers. So we'll break that down more as we get deeper into the week. But certainly the Cardinals were able to expose that secondary. It feels like the Seahawks could absolutely do that as well. Some statistics from last year, and a few of them here might jump out to you. This kind of tells me this is not a great defense for the Tennessee Titans and that their offense really saved them last year. They were near the bottom of the league in red zone percentage. They were 30th in the NFL at 68%. 68% of the time their opponents got into the end zone when they were in the red zone. Not good. They were dead last in the NFL, 52% third down conversion rate last year. So they couldn't get teams off the field consistently. They also had a 3.54% sack rate, which finished 30th in the NFL. So that's why they brought in Bud Dupree and Danico Autry, because they didn't have a consistent pass rush to be able to pressure opposing quarterbacks. Really, their one saving grace, Rob, 1.4 turnovers per game, which was tied for fifth most in the NFL. Without the ability to create turnovers, this defense would have given up a lot more points. And this team might, instead of being 11-5, they might have been 7-9 or 8-8. That was the slim difference that those turnovers created for them in a number of those close games. So this is definitely a defense that there are a lot of question marks for Mike Vrabel and company.
Oh, no question about it. As we just mentioned, on the offensive side of the ball, the big plays on defense was absolutely what saved the Tennessee Titans a year ago. As you just mentioned with the sack rate, they were expecting big things from Jadeveon Clowney. Lots of people have expected big things from Jadeveon Clowney, obviously. But yes, that's why they brought in Bud Dupree. That's why they brought in the other pass rushers as well, Danico Autry and others. And then again, completely retooling their cornerback play. I think this is a young, talented defense. I think the Seahawks are going to be happy they're playing them in week two, just like they're going to be happy they play the Indianapolis Colts in week one, because I think that both of these clubs are going to be a lot higher on our big board and on our power rankings when we start talking in November and December.
Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the all new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. When we come back for our Wednesday episode, continuing to prepare for the upcoming matchup between the Seahawks and the Titans, Rob and I will be breaking down 3 offensive and 3 defensive matchups to watch at Lumen Field. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.